Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. I'll keep on bomb them. Take the man that says say that I'm a stormy, stab somebody down the lane. I'll keep on bomb them. Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. I'll keep on bomb them. Take the man that says say that I'm a stormy, stab somebody down the lane. I'll keep on bomb them.
Hello and welcome to the Lookout Landing Podcast. My name is John Troop and I am the Deputy Managing Editor here at Lookout Landing. And we are coming to you live from a snowy Seattle, Washington. I'm joined today by two of my fellow co-writers here. We have Kate Prusser, Managing Editor of Lookout Landing. Kate, how is it over there in West Seattle? It sounds like it's not been great.
I'm considering which of my cats to eat first.
what's sort of the breakdown on the pros and cons for each cat?
Well, I've narrowed it down to the two younger ones, as they are not so bony as my old man, who I could never eat anyway. I love him too much.
Fair enough.
But yeah, it's a little bit desperate here. There is, they canceled the bus that used to go by my house in the last round of the transit cutbacks. So it's not a bus route, so it's not plowed. Mm-hmm. And everyone is just kind of apparently cool with just being at home. So like the streets are a solid, like up to your ankle, mid calf. Of unplowed goodness, and I'm going a little stir crazy here.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're gonna really try and stir that a little more.
Yes.
We also have Matthew Robertson. Matthew, how are things on the hill?
Things are cold, but these takes remain hot.
Excellent.
So
we can warm ourselves.
I've watched my neighborhood kind of turn into an episode of Jackass. It's a lot of people just finding things in their home and then using it to get down the hill. So I've seen cardboard boxes, like the tops of garbage cans. Some people have actually got like real skis and snowboards. It's been pretty fun. But like Kate, I have not left my apartment in a while. I kind of actually planned this expertly. I went to the grocery store in between snowfalls, so I should be all right.
That was smart. Yeah, I did the beforehand, and supplies are running about as low as morale. So,
yikes! What's the most inadvisable sledding run you guys have ever done in your lives? Because I've done some poorly thought out tobogganing in my life, but I'm curious. You both lived in some snowier places than Seattle.
Are you talking about when Matthew lived in San Diego?
No, it's snowier. It's snowier on the east side than it is here.
My childhood in Sammamish definitely featured like sledding down a hill that led to like a retention pond, which was gross as hell. But like it was the best hill, so you'd have to kind of bail before you got to like the really brown water that I guess was also frozen. So it was either like if it was cold enough where it froze, you're like, oh, that's gonna hurt, and if it was just water, then you're like, oh, that's disgusting. So
that's sort of a rough lose there. What about you, Kate? Are you a big sledder?
No, because I lived here most of my life, and then college in Virginia, not a lot of snow there.
I guess that's fair.
And then Philadelphia, which had a ton of snow, and this is the thing that people miss while they're like, oh, Seattle snow wimpy babies. Like, yeah, motherfuckers, it's not hard when your city is flat.
Yeah, I was going to say, literally the entire eastern, like, half of the United States doesn't have topography, so,
yeah,
like...
No. I mean, Philly was flat, so, like, yeah, you could get out there in your skis and whatever, and I mean,
you could
also
lean and
but also, you know, they were set up for that. Like, the snow would come and everyone would like shift into snow mode, like, okay, chains on the, I mean, people owned chains and rock salt and shovels and stuff. I have one shovel and it's a plastic shovel that I've had since the 80s. That's since I was as tall as the shovel. Like, they don't really sell grown-up snow shovels here, so it's
just
different, you know?
It's definitely rough.
We're not prepared for
this. I mean, we had a mayor essentially not get reelected because they
sent
one snowplow not to anywhere except their house. So
that was some shady. We've had some shady goings on, haven't we? For a city that,
for a city that like really prides itself on some like up and up and up politics
on
the
We're
forefront.
We're so progressive. I don't think anyone's head is going to roll over this because, and it's, you know, it shows too, like, how accurate our projection systems are now. Like, kind of what they said was going to happen happened.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking out over Green Lake, which I can finally actually see again, and it is still coming down here. People are trudging through with dogs of varying sizes, and
make sort of a segue into baseball and the state of baseball right now, the finer analytics are helping us with the snow, but they're maybe hurting the people who are sitting at home right now without jobs.
Indeed.
Right? Because we can look and see that, like, not all of these players are going to be great buys, and so no one wants to give Marwin Gonzalez a whole bunch of money right now. Even though literally every team could use a Marwin Gonzalez. Boggles my mind is like, yes, Harper, Machado, okay, like they're both great players. Every team could theoretically use a great player. I mean, the Mariners don't really need them because we've got a bunch of pretty exciting young outfielders. Maybe use Machado, although is he a real shortstop?
I think he's more real of a shortstop than Tim Beckham, and probably his bat is real enough that it doesn't really matter when it comes to J.P. Crawford.
Yeah, and I mean, you could always, kindly shuffle Kyle off to the side, right? But
yeah, if you get Manny Machado, which, in fairness, it sounds like he, just legitimately doesn't want to play on the West Coast.
I think... And I mean, that's something else to kind of take in as well. But it's been a tough slog.
Hard living.
Tough slog, and I think maybe you could talk Bryce Harper into the West Coast, but he plays the position that we don't really need, which we're gonna cover today.
Indeed. So Matthew sort of drew up our position by position preview for the Mariners. Last week we went through infielders both at the major league level and throughout the minor leagues. And what are we covering today, Matthew?
I was gonna let the weather talk go as long as possible so that Mike Trout would finally listen. We can get him on our side. But
just planting the seed.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he'll listen. He needs to fucking scout his competition in the AL West. But
you're saying that like he's gonna re-sign with the Angels, and my gut.
Ooh, that is a great point.
My gut tells me, Jersey boy, want to go home.
That's I didn't even really consider that. I really hope that happens, so then I can fully embrace Mike Trout.
Oh, it would be so great to be able to, openly root for Mike Trout. Because I like the Phillies. Obviously, I spent a long time in Philly. If Mike Trout was a Philly, that would be, just personally, that would really work out for me. So if you guys could make that happen.
I'm a big fan of basically all the, entertaining Mariners going to the NL
Absolutely.
East, where it's I basically can enjoy any outcome here. All of these are entertaining.
And their games start at 4 p.m. so you can watch the whole thing before the Mariners even start. That's always nice.
A real easy second team situation there.
Yeah, but anyway, we're here to talk about our first team and our outfielders that we have. If you missed the first installment of the series, go listen to that. We discussed the infielders on the roster. And today we're going with the outfielders, which there's only really one full-time outfielder that remains from last season in Mitch Haniger. This offseason alone, we've lost some fan favorites in Guillermo, Ben Gamel, Denard Span, and a fan enemy in Cameron Maben. So we've reshuffled the deck here in Seattle. And I guess I want to start with a question for the group. Of the departed outfielders, which are you saddest to see go?
Well,
this could be from a baseball standpoint or a personal you love them with your whole heart standpoint.
I will marry baseball and fan favorite and say I'm pretty sad about Guillermo being gone. Not only because he was a literal joy to watch play baseball, I think it's really fun, and it's especially rewarding to like to see a guy who has battled for so long to want to play baseball, is living out his dream every day. He gets to step on the field. He's so happy to be there. He plays with such a joyful spirit. But then also, I was looking at the most outs above average, and Guillermo, out of like 200 outfielders, Guillermo came in 30th with like 5. Outs above average, so Guillermo's saving you 5 outs per season, I guess, with his outfield play, which is surprising because defensive metrics don't always let. What's one of the arguments about Guillermo, right, was like the defensive metrics didn't ever like him as much as the eye test did, and I always thought that Guillermo was a better outfielder than what the defensive metrics showed. So it was nice to have one kind of come out in support of him.
Yeah, I would probably put. I mean, I will miss Guillermo.
Mitch Haniger, by the way, just to follow up on that, is ranks in the bottom, like, 15%. He was way down.
Doesn't matter dingers.
All right. I'm just saying. Doesn't matter dingers.
That actually just speaks to the weirdness of defensive metrics when, like, Mitch Haniger can rate so good in some and so bad in the others. Yeah, it's like, who do we believe?
That's true.
But, yeah, I do think that's a good point because I do think Guillermo, I mean, Tampa Bay Ray, Guillermo Heredia, who we will talk about. But, he did seem like a good outfielder, and it was always very strange to see him rated so poorly. So I'm glad that there's some indications of strength there. I will miss Denard Span a lot.
Yeah.
I think, you know, his numbers were good, and he's the sort of player that the league currently doesn't necessarily have a ton of room for because you have 12, 13-man bullpens or pitching staffs, and as a result, you're just not going to have extra guys on the bench who are, you know, average or above average hitters. And
Denard
Span
is a guy who would really, really benefit from the DH being universal. As would Adam Jones. I mean, and you know, we need to give those guys jobs. Like that should be a job. So anyone who does not like the DH can think hard about what they want to see, who they want to see in baseball, because there is a certain joy to seeing players like Nelson Cruz and Denard Span, whose days of playing the field are maybe slightly past them, but who you would much rather see taken at bat as pitchers. Continue to decline in their ability to put up a shall we say, competitive at bat.
Right. Yes. Would you rather watch Denard Span or John Lester hit? The answer is very clear. Like, we don't need to pretend like it's some like sanctity of the game issue where like John Lester has to hit 079 for anything to matter.
But the strategy.
Could just be Denard Span.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. The strategy is take him out as soon as possible and get a real hitter in there. So
yeah,
I'm going to miss Denard Span so much. Just absolutely. Everything that he did, I feel like was so positive for the team, like on the field and off the field, and for the fans too. Like just from, I mean, off the field, he's doing his foundation stuff that we were kind of lucky enough to be a part of and help him out with. And then he also has an adorable son on Instagram posting
DJ.
A lot of pictures of. He has enormous arms, which came out on a turn ahead the clock night. Like, everything that Denard Span did was amazing. And, like, yeah, he's not, you know, going to light the world on fire, but he's a very useful player who pretty much every team could use. Even if you are not trying to win, like, the value of Denard Span, you know, talking to your young guys, being around your young guys, which I know a lot of people kind of poo-poo. Like, I'm sure there is a lot of people who would respect Denard Span's voice and any clubhouse, no matter if it's a 100-win team or a 100-loss team. So I will miss his sort of dad presence on this team, as well as his really solid at-bats, which he seemed to put up every single time he stepped to the plate.
Absolutely. Well, and it's also nice, I think, I mean, Denard's in a tough spot right now because he just hasn't been signed. It's unthinkable that he won't at least get a minor league deal, but if he doesn't want a minors deal, then, you know, that makes sense because he deserves more than a minors deal. But it's nice that Guillermo and Ben Gamel, who I could do without watching any more in the outfield, but was on a pretty unequivocally, especially for a stretch this year, one of the only people who was going up there and putting up decent at-bats.
Yeah.
Like, there was just a rough stretch where it was like, oh my god, we just need an average hitter. Thank you, Ben Gamel, for being an average hitter. I'm excited for him to be in a position in Milwaukee where he doesn't have to be asked to do more than he needs than he's capable of, you know, because he's a good base runner. He's fast. He's a good sort of left fielder, and he'll basically get to be in a platoon over there, and that's good. That's a good fit for him. So, you know, and he'll look awesome defensively because he's going to be replacing or paired with Ryan Braun. So, really across the board, a sort of a real step up for Ben Gamel, and that's nice.
Absolutely. Late game defensive replacement for Ryan Braun. help extend his career a little bit too, extend his legs some, so he doesn't have to be playing.
That's
full
another
games.
Fun National League team to kind of keep an eye on this year, just from like a ease of rooting for them. You don't have to worry about them like taking wins from the Mariners. Not that that would even really matter this year, but I'm all in on the Brewers for sure. What do you guys think are maybe some like realistic expectations for Mitch Haniger? We saw him break out in a big way last year, make the All-Star team, kind of become one of the faces of the team. This year, I think he's pretty much unequivocally the face of the offense. And I'm wondering if you see this year
he's
as like a sure thing.
He's literally the only player in every single promotional item from the team. Like, the postcard comes to my house to remind me that it's time to buy time to buy tickets, and it's Mitch Haniger. Like, you pick up your pocket schedule, it's Mitch Haniger on that. Every single ad for the team, it's like, it's Mitch and Marco, and that's, like, kind of it.
Yeah, even Alexa is on board. I'm sure a lot of people saw that video.
You don't know who's going to be around.
Yeah. Do you guys think that this is going to be another step forward year? Is it like, you think maybe there's some regression possibilities? Is he going to kind of stay the same? Like, what do you think is a realistic expectation for 2019 Mitch Haniger? Like, obviously, I don't think we all expect him to win the MVP or anything, but what should the fans expect from the new Mitch?
I'm going to kick all Mitch questions. Like, for me, if Mitch is just what he was last year, which I think is reasonable, I'm super happy. But I'm going to kick this question over to our Mitch Haniger expert.
Yeah, I was kind of doing that as well and hoping that we would just alley-oop it to John.
That was very kind. I think that you can sort of look at last year as a reasonable baseline expectation for Mitch. I mean, he's basically been that player for 2 years now. You know, in 2017 he got hurt, but his performance was essentially on pace for what he was, or even a little bit less than what he was last year. And last year he was healthier and he was better and he was more consistent. Players don't typically get so much better necessarily at the age that he is at, but you know, he's still in his late 20s. He's easily the best player on the Mariners right now, and I think the nice thing about Haniger is he's got decent athleticism. He's obviously got a very strong arm, but his main skills are at the plate. And it's a lot easier to age at the plate than it is elsewhere, I think. It's just not as difficult to age when you already have great offensive skills versus when you're more dependent on your athleticism or on, you know, as a pitcher, velocity and things like that. So from what we've seen, we've heard Haniger working out at Driveline, or at least getting some evaluations there. We've heard he's doing various other training things. I think we could maybe see, well, I think it's likely we see his on-base percentage rise just because he's going to be the most proven offensive presence in the lineup.
Yeah, it's going to be, he is not going to see a pitch in like August.
Yeah, I don't know that that will be him doing better necessarily as much as it will be people thinking, well, who is that hitting third or fourth, you know? And I don't really know who's going to hit third or fourth. I mean, this is just in an assumption that Haniger would hit second, which is a pure assumption there. But
that's definitely where I'd like to see him hit. I feel like, you know, there's a lot of evidence that your best hitter should be hitting second. And, like, if he's up after Malik's, that just creates a lot of fun. Hopefully Malik's is on base running around. Mm-hmm. And then maybe, I mean, if Edwin is still around, like, that's a pretty fun first inning, mm-hmm. at least, you know, for a couple mm-hmm. months, having those three start the game off for the Mariners, and hopefully Edwin can help them jog home with just massive home runs. But yeah. I don't know if we should really be expecting Edwin to stick around or get too attached to him.
They are supposedly still trying to trade him, so I would assume we won't see him dealt at least until spring training, just because I don't know who would take him at this point. But yeah, it's once if someone gets hurt somewhere in the league, then you might see Edwin Encarnacion.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm very pleased with the idea of Mitch Haniger being like the guy moving forward. Like, I know we debated on a past podcast whether or not they should trade him when the whole, you know, when the Paxton, Cano, Diaz deals were going down. We were all thinking, right, is Mitch next? And now that it's pretty clear that that's not going to happen, at least not anytime soon, it's pretty cool to, like, have a guy that you can get behind who was, like, a trade that actually worked out, yeah, which we haven't had very often, mm-hmm. and a guy who, like, provides some stability, because I'm sure these next couple of years are going to be a lot of roster turnover. There already has been, obviously. But just knowing that we have, like, a guy who's proven himself at the big league level, made the All-Star team and all that, that's a fun thing to have, where, like, you know, Robinson Cano and Nelson Cruz were that as well, but it was a little different because they were older and had been, you know, kind of household names elsewhere, but Mitch Haniger was like our guy that we got to discover before the rest of the league did in a lot of ways. And thank you again to the Arizona Diamondbacks for just handing him over for a low price.
Handing him over and then sending the hitting coach who helped him, you know, helped create his breakout. I mean, obviously the credit belongs to Mitch, but I'm pretty excited about having Tim Laker in the organization as a hitting coach, the guy who worked with Haniger,
yeah, that's a good
guy
point.
Who worked with JD Martinez. Excited to have him. And, you know, so not only do you have Tim Laker helping guys out, but then you have Mitch Haniger being like, this is the guy who helped me. And, I mean, Malik Smith said himself, like, I want to learn everything I can from Mitch Haniger. So
it's a very funny series of hires that the Mariners have made. I mean, it is just like, a lot of them are, hey, this dude really did a ton for me kind of hires. Like, they hired Perry Hill because Perry Hill taught D. Gordon to be a good infielder.
Yes, and he's going to teach J.P. Crawford to be a good infielder. Yes. And maybe Tim Beckham, who knows?
Yeah. And, like, Paul Davis.
Paul Davis.
Like, Paul Davis worked with worked with the Cardinals, and also I believe has a like strong connection with at least a few of the people in the Mariners organization already, including Brian DeLunas. Mm-hmm. And so,
which also I wrote an article about this actually, which if you are interested in this line of conversation, you can check out about the Mariners' latest minor league hires and specifically how they are kind of moving away from players who are ex-MLBers and into guys who have some kind of a personal relationship, part of hitting Twitter, which is obviously very popular. Like, people who the players themselves follow and look up to and interact with online. So a little bit of a shift there, and something that will definitely be interesting to follow a storyline over the course of the season.
So we're going to see a pretty new outfield this year, and I feel like the big ticket acquisition of the offseason is a huge part of that, obviously, in Malik Smith coming over from Tampa in the Mike Zunino trade. He's going to play a lot, I would assume, in, you know, one of the more premier positions and probably at the top of the lineup. So it's going to be a Malik Smith heavy year, which I'm very excited for. Every single piece of Malik's content I've seen this offseason has been more interesting than anything Mitch Haniger has ever done, which is not to shade Mitch. He's just not quite built for show business like Malik's is. But Malik's is also good at baseball, or at least he was last year, which is exciting. He was a top 10 outfielder in the American League, at least according to F-War. Hit .296, stole 40 bases. So like that coupled with just being like a fountain of joy and wonder, it's gonna make for a fun year.
Did
so
we all watch,
I haven't watched
did we all watch Malik's apartment hunting, the video that the team put out?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I did. Very good job by the Mariners social media team there. But I think we're gonna see a lot of those, I would imagine. Not apartment hunting, obviously, but like a lot of Malik's videos and him being funny. He's already, like, in the short amount of time he's been here, he made fun of Griffey and Edgar by calling them dinosaurs. He announced that he's going to steal more bases than D. Gordon.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
He said he wears number zero because he gives zero fucks. Like, it's been so great in, like, 3 months, and he hasn't even played baseball for us yet.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I'm ready to just see, you know, if I want to watch some, like, superlative center field defense, I'll watch Braden Bishop play. But as far as just an entertaining player on like a 70 something win team, like, bring on Malik's. It'd be, think of how much
you can't ask for more.
Think of how much more people would have loved D. Gordon if like the Mariners had been as bad as I think DePoto thought they were going to be last year, and then they were like good, and then oh no, what do we do about this? But, like, if D had just been, like, a bright light on a bad team, even if he wasn't playing well, but he was, like, fun, I feel like people would react very differently to him. Not that D had a great year. Like, D's walk rate was poopy. So, Malik says he just has to clear that bar, you know? Be better than D Gordon was in 2018 on the field and continue to be delightful and charming off the field. And I feel like we're set up. And he is someone who's so happy to be here, too, which is excellent. Because he was playing in the mausoleum of Tampa Bay. So he's just happy to play in front of people. Like, the bar is very low for him to be happy in Seattle. And I feel like that's important, too.
Yeah, if someone steals 40 bases and no one is around to see it, did it ever really happen?
Yeah, so
I mean, I don't know if we should expect 40 again. Like, it's going to all kind of come down to how much he gets on base and how much they're willing to let him run, which I hope is a lot. But, like, it's going to be just a lot of Malik Smith batting. Like, I assume he's going to hit leadoff, even if he struggles. And I bet they'll just keep him there just because they want to keep him happy and show faith in him. Mm-hmm. So, like, you can sign me up for a bunch of losses if it means 500 plate appearances from Malik Smith.
Malik Smith and, doing, you know, hilarious stuff. Yes, yes.
And that. And his hair has been really nice. Right now he has, like, a cornrowed man bun, which is very innovative. Very NBA. You don't really see a lot of kind of, like, out there hairstyles in baseball. Obviously, they're wearing a hat when they're playing, so we're not going to see it as much. But from what I've seen so far, I am all in on Malik. He's got charisma, he's young, he is a pretty good baseball player. Like, we could do way worse than Malik Smith is what I'm saying.
I think this year is going to be a really good year to be at spring training, and it's really unfortunate that a lot of people aren't going because of the messed up schedule in Japan and everything. But I really think that there are going to be, between Malik's and Shed Long and Dom Thompson Williams, like, I think there is going to be some fun, some swagger, and a brand of baseball that, like, maybe we haven't seen so much with kind of an older roster. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I will be reporting on it.
Yeah, it feels like it's going to be very loose.
Yeah,
like, not a lot of pressure this year, or, like, you know, guys looking over their shoulder, like, oh no, if I do something weird or bad, they're not going to like it. It seems like they're getting a lot of freedom to be themselves.
I mean, I'm going to be straight. Like, there are red flags about Malik Smith. I am worried about that very high BABIP that he ran in the, you know, hitting on turf. I am worried about the fact that he has the slowest bat speed, the slowest recorded bat speed in the minors or in the majors, at like 70, low 70 something. I'm not sure. I'm not sold on the on the field ability, but the personality is great, and we are not wanting for center field options or for outfield options in the system as a whole. So to that I say, just bring on Malix for this year at least. Bring on all the Malix that I can handle for sure.
Yes, it's the year of Malix. But also, I think a fun sleeper that doesn't seem like he's getting a lot of attention and that I think fans will grow to love is Domingo Santana.
Absolutely.
I don't know how much you guys have thought about him. I kind of forget he's on the team every so often, but when I was doing my research for this, I was like, oh yeah, we have Domingo Santana, and what's this? He's dope as hell. Like, it's another very fun addition to this team, which, like I said, I mean, it's kind of beating a dead horse, but they're going to be bad or at least mediocre at best. Like, we want some fun guys to root for, and Domingo is absolutely that, in my opinion.
Yes.
He's got a, like, sort of entertaining, it's not Haniger-esque profile quite, but it's like if you exaggerated all of the things about Haniger and then just including, like, making him gigantic, like, he's got an incredibly strong arm. He's just unbelievably strong himself. Like, everything that he hits goes, like, is 110 miles per hour off the bat. And, like,
my man's is six.
And he swings and misses quite a bit.
He's 6'5". But he is 6'5". That's, like, I mean, I guess that's not, that's short in the NBA, but that's very tall for a baseball player. That's like Aaron Judge territory. You were right.
He does hit the ball hard, too, like you guys said. Like, a lot of encouraging batted ball numbers. I think they were, like, up in the 30% for every year he's been in the league. So he does not lack for power by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of his profile essentially is, like, it reads like young Nelson Cruz did. And I think that's probably not an insignificant part of what they target him for, especially since Scott Servais and Nelson Cruz had a long positive relationship going back to their days in Texas. And so, like, you know, if you're seeing someone who has essentially is like a four tool player, you know, has above average arm, has above average, you know, all offensive profile, and isn't even slow, but, you know, just has a pretty, I think we're going to see essentially another right-handed hitter who can still succeed at Safeco, and I know that's kind of decreased as an issue in since the balls have been juiced or they've moved the fences in or whatever, but it still takes a powerful righty hitter, and Domingo Santana certainly has that in droves to succeed, yes, which is going to be fun.
And absolutely. I mean, they're buying low on him, you know, like after, I think last year he lost like 50 points off his ISO or something like that. He was like,
yeah, he had some injuries, and then he had some bad. Yeah, he had a very similar.
He had a poor,
a sort of similar year to J.P. Crawford, really, and that, like, things just, like, were all messed up from the jump, and then it just didn't really get back on track until right at the end.
Yeah, so I think that they think that they can ameliorate some of these issues. That, you know, part of it is going to be health, part of it might be conditioning. Obviously, when you have a guy who is that big, you have to have a pretty specific conditioning program to keep him. It's just more of you to get hurt, right? So I think that they think that they can help him out with conditioning. I think they think they can help him out with plate discipline, because he was, you know, okay for a power hitter, but really slipped last year. And
which was like one of the first times in his career it had really fallen apart.
I mean, I think that the Brewers were hasty, honestly, or, you know, they were trading away something that they don't need so much anymore, which is the power, to gain something that is maybe a better fit for them as far as having a really athletic outfielder who's young and can roll it, whatever. I would be worried about Domingo Santana's numbers if he was like 4 years older, if he was 30 and had had this. But at 26 and some change, I'm not concerned about some of the red flags about Malik's will continue to concern me until I see next year. The red flags in Santana's profile do not concern me. I don't even really consider them red flags.
Yeah. He's just a guy who's got a decent amount of swing and miss in his swing, but also has unbelievable power, and if he's making just a little more contact, or like he already has shown in the majors, then he's a really good player. And
maybe, you know, you put awesome. What can Tim Laker do for him? You know, what can he's got kind of a track record with those guys, so maybe he can he can help out a big old righty slugger.
Yeah.
I want to give a shout out to Ben Thoen here, one of our own writers at Lookout Landing. He mentioned that the Mariners acquired both of the players who in 2017 had a hard hit percentage above 39 with a fly ball percentage under 30. So in other words, two guys that hit the ball really hard but struggled to get it in the air. So maybe with some Tim Laker magic, they can tap into that and hopefully get Domingo to hit the ball in the air more, which could lead to even more home runs. When he did get the season of his most playing time, he hit 30 home runs. That was that 2017 year that Ben was alluding to. So with more playing time and maybe just like a further emphasis on hitting the ball in the air, like who knows how many home runs he could hit. And like Kate said, like we bought very low on him. Like Ben Gamble, as much as I loved him, like he's not going to be a star, you know, unless he's in like a Leonard Skinner lookalike contest. And Domingo Santana has a much higher chance of like blossoming into something like very useful, whereas Ben Gamble is very much a fourth outfielder.
And if he doesn't, it doesn't hurt you. It's not like if they took a hit at the infield position and one of the people that they're investing in doesn't turn out there. I mean, which I think partially has to do with why they're just stockpiling bodies for that infield. You know, just throw them all at the wall and see who sticks. In the outfield, we have not only, I think, a pretty intriguing major league crop, but we have guys lined up a few deep in the minors, which is not that's not usually something you say about the Mariners system, is that it's deep or stacked, but outfield is the one area in which there's going to be some fun tracking to do.
Kate, I'm glad you brought that up, because we got a Twitter question from @tpedro22. He wants to know if we think a true backup center fielder will make the squad. I know they trust Haniger out there, but it would be nice to have a speedy backup. That seems to me to point at Braden Bishop as the only real candidate for that position. I mean, he's the only backup outfielder on the 40-man right now who could even remotely handle center field. So I guess I'm going to morph this question into, will Braden Bishop make the 25-man roster? And I'm going to defer this question to you fellas, because I've never seen Braden Bishop actually play baseball.
Kate, you go first.
Braden Bishop, will he make the 25-man? I don't think they're going to want to blow his service time, start the clock on his service time too soon. I think that there would have to be an injury, and also there has to be some kind of a settling of the Jay Bruce situation. Like, they have too many people to play first base DH right now, essentially. So
right.
I think you got to see maybe Encarnacion go or have an injury. I think in any case, you have an injury to first base DH or anywhere in the outfield, Braden Bishop is the next one up, but I don't know if he starts on the 25-man. I don't think so.
Yeah, I'd agree. If he hadn't had a pitch hit him in the arm last year, I think there's a great chance he does, but the fact that he just didn't get any AAA reps last year, I think that gives them enough, I mean, not a reason necessarily, but I think it's a good enough reason to want to give him a chance to face the essentially highest level prior to the majors a little bit.
Yes, and I am a big believer in the necessity of some AAA time. Like, I really believe I think the A levels are kind of, you know, whatever, you face different things at different times. I think you can jumble those around. I think it's really important to get a lot of time at AA and face the best pitching that you're ever going to see. because it's such a drastic step up from A-level competition. And I think it's really important to get your time in at AAA and be able to see off-speed stuff and crafty guys, because and guys who can, like, really locate a quality breaking ball and make you look dumb on it. Tyler O'Neill needed that, and he looked real bad for a while before he started looking good again after he beat up on Double-A pitching. So in the Southern League, which is, like, not the best level of competition, but still. I believe in that as a developmental step. It is, frankly, surprising to me the way the Angels are handling Joe Adell. That's a different issue, but they are kind of crunching him. John has a theory that they're rushing top prospects, Adell and Griffin Canning, up to kind of prove to Trout that he's going to have some quality teammates. But yeah, they seem to be rushing through those steps. I am very pro having your proper developmental time at the minors. I think there was a trend for a while of rushing guys through, and I don't want them to do that with Braden. So take some time, have him in Tacoma, let him see some real nasty off-speed pitches from guys who were pitching in, like, Japan last year, and then we'll see how he does.
Yeah, there's no reason to rush him either. Like,
no.
It's not like there's an incentive to get Braden Bishop up here right now.
I think that it is going to be weird early on because we've got Hannegren, right, for sure. We've got Malik in the center, for sure. We've got Domingo Santana in left, for sure. And they have said Jay Bruce is going to get the majority of his work in left field as well. So they're going to probably not actually straight platoon Domingo Santana.
Does that smell right to you, John? You are an expert at decoding that decoding Jerry truthiness.
Well, I think it makes more sense than the alternative, which would be him playing a bunch at first base over both Ryan Healy and Daniel Vogelbach, both of whom need a lot of time.
Unless you bust Healy down to Tacoma because he hasn't learned how to take a walk.
Yeah, he should walk to Tacoma. That could teach him a lesson.
Yeah, so I guess that's possible. But, I mean, there's just not a backup outfielder there, so I think you may get some real janky ass Dylan Moore in center field days.
Boy.
There's a lot of those
early in the season. Well, because they're making, you know, and I think this is not a bad idea because I think the Mariners have suffered from, you know, it's wonderful having Nelson Cruz, but when you have a full-time DH, you essentially are sacrificing a position of versatility. And so as a result, you know, the Mariners not only were already not a very versatile team, but were sacrificing additional versatility.
Right.
So trying to push themselves to have guys like Shed Long and guys like Dylan Moore and, you know, even Christopher Negron still somehow
a Mariner. Still. Survived every cut.
Unbelievably so.
Yeah.
Who needs Marwin Gonzalez when you have Christopher Negron?
And they'll have Ichiro the first two games,
John.
At least.
Let's go, baby. Ichiro.
Oh my
Ichiro.
I mean, again, if the team is going to be bad, like, be hilariously bad. Like,
you know we're getting that opening day Felix start with Ichiro in right field, baby. It's going to be amazing.
I mean, I have been...
Keep that streak going. Keep that streak alive.
I have been saying that I miss the early 2000s, so...
Yeah. A lot of good Hooba stuff in the early 2000s.
It's a simpler time. I really miss my, like...
I miss my chunky highlights.
I mean, my popping lip glosses.
I miss recess.
All right, shut up.
Good times.
Both the show and the activity.
All right.
What about the so that's sort of the top of the crop. What about the throughout the rest of the system? I mean, there were so many different outfielders that the team acquired, is almost the entirety of their acquisitions this offseason were outfielders, to the point where we were actually getting like a little bit stressed out for a while. It was like, okay, now middle infield.
Yes, yeah.
Like, okay, now pitching. Please, like, address the needs.
Well, I mean, the Travelers outfield last year was made up of one real outfielder, which was Brayden Bishop, who was then summarily replaced by Kyle Lewis. And then, like,
Bo Amaral.
Yes. And,
like, 27-year-old.
Yes, and Felia, when he came back from his...
Relative of Richie Amaral, I think.
Yes, definitely. Yes.
Nephew, maybe, or something? Yeah.
And the same, you have a similar problem at Modesto. You don't, you know, and then it's like, is Nick Zamorelli, we love him, Nicky Three Sticks, but is he an outfielder? Is he an infielder? Like, that particular part of the system, there's a lot of depth lower down, and there's a lot of people who they have signed to play that upper end, but the high A, double A level was pretty lacking. So we have a pretty exciting Travs infield double A that will be Kyle Lewis, Dom Thompson Williams, and who am I missing? Jake Fraley. Thank you. That's right. Any of one of whom would be an interesting potential to be jumped to Tacoma should things shuffle.
Mm. Yeah, it's going to be a lot more. I mean, obviously, it's going to be a lot more interesting to follow the minor leagues this year. But like at every level, like in Tacoma, they should have Brayden Bishop, Ian Miller, and
Eric Felia, probably.
Yeah, probably Eric Felia mixing in, maybe Dustin Ackley, weirdly, and then
let's
like
hope not.
Some
Tito Polo,
yeah, you know,
Tito
some,
Polo,
maybe
my
Tito
son,
po- maybe Tito Polo,
my doing son,
indeed, and so that will be, you know, even that's like relatively thinner in terms of prospect hype, but even that will be more compelling than last year, where there just wasn't a ton. You know, Arkansas is going to have essentially, I mean, what, three of the maybe 15 more most exciting people in the system, and you know, Modesto, hard to say, but
Modesto's going to be
Modesto will probably have
Keegan McGovern for
maybe
sure.
Keegan,
who will be exciting.
Who, one of you, I would love to hear go on a little bit about, but. I mean, and then West Virginia is just going to be
stacked.
Like it's going to
ridiculous.
Be the most impressive. Yeah, it's going to be so exciting. I hope they're going to put video in for their home games.
Please,
because I'm not sure if they have.
We will
it.
Do like a GoFundMe here
yeah.
to.
Yeah, I mean, we should. Yeah, we should actually get on that right now.
How much can it
like,
possibly
I'm
be?
Actually
right.
Gonna, it's one camera.
It's
one
camera,
Michael.
Yeah.
It's one HD camera.
That's
and
all it will take for me to
it.
Care about West Virginia.
We don't even have to have a person
they have the
it.
Power.
Like...
They must have the, like, supplies.
Yeah, if any Mariners brass listens to this, please.
And we know you do.
Do this one thing for us. We will crowdfund. Mm-hmm. If the power can just provide someone to man the camera, because there's yes. I think maybe one, no wait that's high A that's the Florida league. Okay, there's basically no cameras in high A, but low A is not
the Appy League. The Appy League has some decent number, at least, but it's still could be better.
You mean
out
the
there.
Sally League or the Appy League? The
Sally
League,
League sorry,
is
thank
the one
you.
That they'll be playing.
Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, it's going to...
Heaven forbid we call a thing something that makes some goddamn sense.
Well,
God.
I
totally
is,
know what you're talking
it
about.
It is technically the South Atlantic League. That is South Atlantic.
Yes.
When you get into, you know... Anyway, that will be...
Lakewood,
that will be
New Jersey.
Extremely fun to follow. And then, of course, there will be Everett and the crop of new whoever the new draftees are, who will be always fun to watch. So, should be pretty... The only one I'm worried about is Modesto. Everything else should be pretty watchable. And I don't know, you know, I doubt that Jared Kelenic will have to spend a full season at A-ball if he goes in there and rakes. I think they'll be pretty free and easy with that promotion to the Cal League. So, yeah, lots of depth, lots of stuff to watch out for, lots of prospect. Like, this is your year to get into prospects. Do it this year, because this year it's not going to be, like, squinting and trying to see a prospect. It's legit people who are all legit top 100 lists.
Yeah, I'm stoked. I've never, ever cared about the minor leagues, but this will be the first time since the days of Kevin Pitsnoggle that I care about what's going on in West Virginia. And that is a deep college basketball cut for anyone who understood that reference. Wow. We are kindred spirits.
Man. Wait, who was the dude who was the University of West Virginia basketball coach for a long time?
Huggy Bear? Bob Huggins?
Paul Huggins?
Bob Huggins. He's still there.
He is still there. God, that man is diligent.
Oh, yeah, with the sweatsuit every time, and then he brings his own stool so he doesn't have to sit with his assistant coaches. I love it a lot. Mm-hmm. He seems kind of overbearing, but I would still listen to what he has to say.
As we're kind of winding to the end here, coming in on an hour. Do you have any questions from the people that you wanna go over?
Yes, we got a good amount of questions from the people. Thank you, as always, to the people. One of them is from a person named Isabel Manassian.
Oh,
not sure how she found us. Sounds familiar. I just can't put my finger on what her connection is to this little blog that we do. Nonetheless, she had a good question. In honor of Valentine's Day this week, please match make fans of former Mariners with new Mariners. So what I think Isabel is saying here is, like, if you liked so-and-so, I think you'll like new guy.
Hey, we're going to have an article to that very end sometime this week in celebration of Valentine's Day. So,
this Isabel person has a good understanding of content. We should probably look into hiring her or something. We touched on it earlier a little bit. Like, I think an obvious one is if you liked Nelson Cruz, then here's a Domingo Santana. I mean, both power out the ass, big, lovable Dominican dudes. And I think Domingo will be at least passable on defense, which we probably couldn't have said about Nelson Cruz at the tail end there. Mm-hmm. I will say, this is a stretch for sure, but that's what I'm here for. If you like Ichiro, I think you'll like Malik Smith. And I'm talking prime Ichiro, not 2019 Ichiro. Because hear me out. Ichiro is obviously, like, the best player ever of this profile, so I'm not saying Malik's will even sniff his level of productivity. But it's going to be a lot of infield hits, a lot of stolen bases, and a lot of plays where you go, Malik's is the only one on the team who could do that, which is sort of reminiscent of Ichiro. And we also heard stories of Ichiro being really funny and engaging behind the scenes, but Malik's will do that incredibly in front of the scenes. Like, it's not going to be hidden or shy. Yeah, Malik's is very much in the scene, so we don't have to worry about, like, it being limited to clubhouse stories or, like, a rare snippet of Ichiro speaking English. Like, it's going to be Malik's on 10 all the time. So he's not going to be near the hitter that Ichiro is or the defender, obviously, but from a personality, like, leadoff hitter, spark plug guy, he's your man.
All right.
And that is a stretch, which I acknowledged off the top.
I like it. John, do you have an...
I think we also mentioned we mentioned a few other good ones. I think this is there's not really a good replacement for Edwin Diaz, which is pretty tough. I mean, there isn't anywhere in the league, so that's understandable. So I'll say Jerson Bautista is a good replacement for Juan Nicasio. If you really liked just a weird large guy throwing pretty hard, and it sometimes works.
Perfect.
You will get that, and you will probably get that from a few different Mariners this year, and hopefully some of them will figure it out, because that's going to be Dan Altavilla, and that's going to be Jerson Bautista, and that's going to be Hunter Strickland, and probably some other people we've never heard of, so or have very minimally monitored. So yeah, I think almost every game this year is going to be an adventure in innings 6 through 9. So unfortunately, we won't have the same peace of mind, but fortunately, we won't be as concerned about whether they turn out okay or not. So watching guys come in and try and figure it out. If you can let go of wanting it to actually work out, it will be reasonably entertaining. Yes. And unfortunately, we really needed Juan Nicasio to work it out, and he just couldn't. So it'll be better this time.
Yeah, he had that pesky water on the knee, which we could never figure out.
Yeah.
Anyone who's played Operation knows how difficult that one is to get out.
Right.
I'm going to go with...
You got to get a little dropper.
Okay, I'm going to go with... and again, I'm trying not to steal too much from what we're going to do later this week, so I'm going to pick a different pairing and go with a guy who already has been here, but you haven't seen as much in Sean Armstrong, and say, if you liked Nick Vincent, then you will probably also enjoy Sean Armstrong. As far as somebody who gets up there armed with like a low 90s fastball that does not look impressive, mm-hmm. and you're like, how are you getting batters to swing over the top of this? Through some elite spin rates. And I feel really bad about it because I think I loved Nick Vincent and I loved his little daughter who was so cute. And I feel like Sean Armstrong is maybe the reason Nick Vincent doesn't have a job, because he is cheaper than Nick Vincent. Certainly not a job with the Mariners. Nick Vincent is as yet unsigned. But if you enjoy, yes, I respond to like big stuff. I think that is exciting. Like, you watch a guy throw triple digits or hammer curve. I love a good hammer curve. But I think that especially as more and more pitchers are power pitchers, what I really love now is seeing like the Wade LeBlancs of the world get strikeouts that they have absolutely no business getting. And I'll put in a brief plug for today's 40 and 40, which Ben did, about Sean Armstrong, in which he has a gif of Sean Armstrong getting Mike Trout to swing probably the ugliest swing Mike Trout has ever swung. I mean, it is so ugly and bad. And it's magic. It's magic, and I enjoy that. So if that is your jam, then you will probably enjoy watching Sean Armstrong. I hope.
Excellent. All right, I have two more questions that I think are pressing and need to be addressed. One comes from HD Robot, who wants to know, which Mariner makes the best snowball, which Mariner has superior snow person making abilities, and which Mariner prospect is likely to realize his true calling is the tundra and move to the Yukon? This is a tough one, I think, the first part of it at least, because most of the Mariner players are from warm climates. There's not really anyone who I would trust to know their way around snow, which is why I'm going to go with Scott Servais and pick him for my best snowball, best snow person building skills. A Midwestern dad, I feel like, is going to make a tight snowball. And as a former catcher, I'm sure he could huck that thing.
Mm-hmm. So, despite the fact that he is from West Hills, LA, I think Ryan Healy has relished every moment that he's spent in snow.
He kind of is a snowman.
Yeah, he is very much he is the snowman from Frozen in many ways.
He is Olaf.
Curveballs are the fire. I do think, I mean, he played third base. He's got a pretty decent arm. And and I think he would really take his time. He'd be superfluous with his snowman, and he would take great joy in sharing that with
us. He would use that word too, superfluous.
Uh-huh.
He would absolutely. Mellifluous. Absolutely. I am going to go with like a sneaky way under the radar one and say Mariners prospect Noel V. Marte, despite being just 17 years old and having never seen snow in his life, has the largest hands I've ever seen. His hands are enormous. Mm. And I feel like they're tiny little snow shovels, and they could be really good at, like, scooping up a lot of snow and compacting it really quickly. And then he's got that shortstop arm, so flinging it over. I think Noel V. Marte would do some serious damage to your face in a snowball fight.
That checks out to me.
Mm-hmm. It's very
scientific. By the way, the prospect most likely to move to the UConn is definitely Nick Rumbelow.
Every other answer is wrong. That's 100% correct. He has the coonskin cap already. I don't know what else he could want, so.
Yeah.
100%.
All right, and then the final question, which isn't really a question. It was more of a request from friend of the blog, Brittany Bush Pillay. She wanted us to just make fun of Taylor Motter, so I will oblige and say, this snowstorm is the most annoying barrage of whiteness to hit Seattle since Taylor Motter was a man.
Oh.
Got him.
Oh, it.